This is a download from BFM 89.9, the business station.
The BFM Breakfast Grill, connecting you to the top people and ideas. Presented by U Mobile.
I'm Wong Xiaoning and this is The Breakfast Grill. Pharmaceutical companies were obvious winners of the COVID-19 pandemic, especially if they were involved in vaccinations. But as our country transitions to endemicity, can profit growth be maintained? A question we put forth to one of Malaysia's leading listed pharmaceutical producers, Duo Pharma Biotech. Joining us this morning is their Group Managing Director, Leonard Arif. I want to start with the COVID-19 vaccinations. Now, from what I gather, Duo Pharma has an agreement to distribute the Sinopharm vaccine in Malaysia. But it's also one of the more expensive vaccines at around $30 per dose. Now, is this plan to distribute this vaccine dead since the government has capped the ceiling price at 49 ringgit?
Actually, the prices are not as high as you indicated. I think in the early days of the pandemic, there were a lot of traders who were bringing in the vaccine and obviously they were charging very, very high prices at the time. But it hadn't got registration. So what Duo Pharma managed to do was bring it in, force down the prices, and then of course get it registered. The price cap is something we're still in discussion with the government. I think there was the means upon which they determined the price. There were some areas that we were a little bit uncomfortable. So we're still in discussion and we hope to resolve that matter very, very soon.
But all vaccines have an expiry date. And since you have installed 900,000 vials of this vaccine, what are your plans though? Because if it's not used, do you then have to write it off?
Yes, I mean, obviously, if we don't use it, we have to write it off. But I think the one benefit of the Sinopharm vaccine is the use by date is actually 24 months. It's among all the vaccines, it's actually got the longest shelf life in the market. So that actually assists us tremendously because obviously, as the pandemic moves to an endemic phase, there will still be requirements of continued boosters, etc. We just got approval from the Ministry of Health for usage of Sinopharm vaccine as a booster shot as well. So we're quite confident we'll be able to slowly move out the stock.
So when do these vaccines actually expire?
All next year.
All next year. The other question I have is that the vaccination program in Malaysia has been rather successful. We've got a vaccination rate for double dose at least 80% for all Malaysians. Now, if the ceiling price were indeed removed and there was demand, which segment is left to penetrate then?
I think at the end of the day, you're right. Let me first state that I think the vaccination program in Malaysia was widely successful relative to what I've seen globally. But, you know, we have to ask ourselves how long the Malaysian government can continue providing the vaccines to everybody, gratia, free. You know, I foresee a situation where the market will evolve. The government will still have to step in to provide assistance for possibly the B40. And the rest of us will probably have to access our vaccination as required via the private sector. And that's where I think the next phase is going to come in, where the private sector availability of the vaccine will be more widespread than it is currently.
But then this begs the question as to how popular or how much demand there will be for this Sinopharm vaccine. And I want to state here clearly, all vaccines are good vaccines. As long as they're in your arm, there are no bad vaccines, provided they've been approved by, of course, our Ministry of Health. But studies have questioned the level of efficacy of these protein-based Sinopharm vaccines against the Omicron or perhaps even future mutations. I mean, even our Health Minister, Khairi Jamaluddin, tweeted, any booster is better than no booster, although the MOH recommends a booster dose of Pfizer or AZ for the best top-up protection. Some are still asking for options. So even if the ceiling price were removed and you can start reselling the vaccine, because I understand you suspended sales, what kind of take-up will there be? Will people want this vaccine?
Well, I think I agree with you totally. All vaccines are good vaccines as long as they've been approved for usage in Malaysia. I think let's start that. As far as the Sinopharm vaccine, I think it all boils down to a question of technology. In the case of the vaccines that are coming from China, they're all based on inactivated technology. Now, this is a technology that's been around for over 100 years. So there is a level of confidence in terms of people knowing what the long-term effects. At the end of the day, there's nothing wrong with the newer vaccines, the mRNAs, the viral vectors, etc. It's just that I do understand that some people will have some level of hesitation, mainly because some of these vaccines, the technology at least has only been around for the last 15 to 20 years. So I think ultimately it boils down to choice, one. Secondly, there is also going to be an issue in terms of what vaccines are recognized globally as well. Well, on the one hand, you have the WHO approving a whole range of vaccines. On a country-specific basis, you have countries that say, okay, we don't recognize inactivated vaccines. So we've had situations of Malaysians getting caught in Germany. But then the reverse could potentially happen, because when China reopens up its economy, reopens up its ability to visit for tourism, etc., they do not recognize some of the Western vaccines. So it's going to be interesting. The dynamics are extremely interesting. There's, an element of nationalism in it in terms of vaccine recognition. But ultimately, the way I see it, it's a matter of giving the consumer choice in terms of what they are comfortable inducing into their body.
Which then leads to my next question, Leonard, because Zhang Yuntao, he's the chief scientist with the China National Biotech Group. Now, they're a subsidiary of Sinopharm. Their company said that they have started to design Omicron-specific vaccines in three different technology platforms. Is this something that you're already in discussions with them in terms of distributing newer forms of the vaccine?
Oh, we have an arrangement with, obviously, the Sinopharm group in terms of bringing vaccines as required, etc. But I think from the point of view of the technology platform, yes, we would be interested. But again, it depends on what the market dynamics domestically, because it will all boil down to demand. Is there going to be a demand in Malaysia? Because, you see, if you look at the vaccine ecosystem in Malaysia, without COVID-19, we only consume about 400 million ringgit worth of vaccines a year in Malaysia. That's a whole range of other bits and pieces. So, at the end of the day, I think scientists will continue developing alternatives. Like the flu vaccine, every year when they launch it, they actually launch a different variant. So I think that's what's going to happen with COVID. You're going to find eventually the market will stabilize. The initial primary dosage has given people protection. And then, there will be variants that of vaccines that will come out on an annual basis to assess what they believe will be the variant that is most pervasive in the market for the following year.
So, Leonard, does this mean that the business of vaccines for Duo Pharma is never really going to be very significant? It's not going to be a substantial contributor to your current revenues?
No, It's not. Because I think we started participating because we wanted to assist in terms of the pandemic. We knew that there were issues about registration, especially coming from different countries, etc. So we wanted to play that interface to make sure that the product could get registered in Malaysia. The vaccine sector in totality is an interesting sector. The only problem is that 400 million spread over multiple technology platforms.
Meanwhile, let's talk about Duo Pharma's four-pronged strategy for growth. And I want to start with a move towards diversifying into high-value biological and niche products. I mean, is this a reason why you acquired a 5.8% stake in SCM Life Science for $4.6 million? I mean, in your recent investor relation briefing notes, it says that the technology is already applicable in this country. So what does this mean? Are there any products already approved by MOH?
Okay, SCM, in its simplest form, is basically a company that specializes in stem cells. It's Korean-based, is publicly listed. It's one of the few stem cell companies in the world that actually have scaled up GMP manufacturing facility in North Carolina as well. So we took an investment in them specifically because of our interest in stem cell technology. Their initial product they were working on, that they're now in clinical three, was a product that was used for organ replacement. So obviously we don't do many organ replacements in Malaysia. But the secondary product they were developing was what caught our interest. They're developing a product for atopic dermatitis. Now, atopic dermatitis is something that's quite prevalent in Malaysia and Southeast Asia for that matter. So we, as part of our investment, we got marketing rights for their range of products. But at the same time, we also agreed with them that we will participate with them in their clinical three.
And you've also done another small acquisition in AZ Therapies for another US $5 million. I mean, I understand it's a private late stage clinical biopharmaceutical business based in the US. It's mainly for the treatment of neuro neurodegenerative diseases, Alzheimer's. Help me understand why Duo Pharma makes these smallish acquisitions, which in the scheme of things aren't significant.
We do it for pipeline, to be quite honest. That's the bottom line. We're not private equity. We invest privately because we think the science is strong, the applicability of the product into the Malaysian market, and the potential that it provides to us in the longer term. Now, these are investments we're making, you're right, they're small, but in return for those investments, we get marketing, and in the case of AZT, we've even negotiating with them in manufacturing rights as well. So these are basically investments for the future as far as Duo Pharma is concerned.
Okay, so Leonard, I've got two questions. Who decides that these investments make sense? You know, do you know enough? Does anyone in the Duo Pharma have the expertise to say, yes, these products will take off? And the second one is, are you prepared to write off these investments if, let's say, the clinical trials fail?
Okay, let me answer the second question first. When you go into these investments, you have to be prepared to write off the investment. Full stop. There's no two ways about it. So as a result, that dictates the sort of due diligence that we put into when we decide on the product. Obviously, we do not go into anything that's still in clinical one and clinical two. We usually go in when there's a proven results in clinical one, clinical two. We have our own business development team, quite capable of reviewing these this data. We also get, as part of our due diligence process, we actually rope in academics from Malaysia to actually review the technology and review the potential as well. So we do a huge due diligence exercise prior to each, and I can assure you that I think we discount probably 90-95% of what comes across our table.
On the breakfast grill this morning is Leonard Arif, Group Managing Director of Duo Pharma Biotech. After the break, the financials, and will inflation and supply chain disruption result in a margin squeeze for one of Malaysia's largest listed pharmaceutical companies, BFM 89.9.
You are listening to the BFM Breakfast Grill, brought to you by U Mobile.
BFM 89.9, welcome back to the Breakfast Grill. In the hot seat this morning is Leonard Arif, Group Managing Director of Duo Pharma Biotech. Just before the break, COVID-19 vaccines, and is there still money to be made? Now, Leonard, let's talk about the public sector sales, which is 43% of Duo Pharma's revenue. Can we get an update on the 375 million ringgit insulin supply contract to the Ministry of Health? Has it been approved?
The SST was always issued out by the Ministry of Health. The issue was on in terms of negotiating some of the terms. Now, we're still in the process of negotiation, but I remain confident that we should resolve the whole matter within the next month or 2 months. So the SST has been issued already. So in that sense, it's been approved. Mm. What hasn't been entered into is an agreement in terms of the terms and conditions behind the supply of the insulin to the Malaysian government.
And the price has been agreed already?
That's all been agreed upon. It's just some of the more detailed items that's yet to be ironed out between both parties.
Okay. Do we also know when the government will call for a new tender for the next approved product purchase list cycle?
Okay. The current APPL has been extended up to the end of 2022. So on the one hand, it's really great because it gives us line of sight in terms of, because obviously the public sector represents a large portion of Duo Pharma's revenue. It gives us good line of sight. Now, so far, the tender has not been called. Okay. And we're already into the month of April. So in answer to your question, I'm not too sure whether the government will roll over the current tender for another period or not. Because the current tender, the prices were all fixed back in 2017. We're all sticking to a price that was actually valid for the last 4 years. So it's going to be challenging, I think, moving forward for suppliers to maintain that sort of price level. Now, as to whether the government enters into a full tender exercise or does it on a piecemeal basis, that's yet to be seen.
Okay, so you said the prices were last negotiated in 2017. Can I then assume that every supplier, including yourself, will want to push for much higher prices this year? Because we do know that a lot of the active ingredients have gone up in cost. So what kind of price revisions are you going to be looking at when you come to the negotiating table with the government?
Well, it's not necessarily correct to say that the prices will go up, even if a tender is called, because you have to go back to where we were in 2017. If you remember, US dollar appreciated quite substantially. actually in 2017. Now, that was built into the prices because we didn't know which way ringgit will actually go. It's been more or less stable within a band of 4 to 4.2. From that perspective, there is some buffer. Yes, COVID has caused some disruption in terms of supply chain, and that's led to increases in some raw materials. So it really depends on how things go, because we see some level of stabilization occurring, and we're already seeing some level of savings, in fact, in our purchasing relative to the same price the last time we placed the order. So I don't think it's right to assume that automatically if the government should open tender, prices would generally go up. In some cases, I suspect some prices may become slightly more cost effective, mainly because of the fact that there's just more quantity available.
And since it's an open tender, do you then see a lot of competition on this front?
Always. In the nature of this industry and the nature of the tender process at the Ministry of Health is that highly, highly competitive. Because everything is based on a company having registration of a product. So every product that we participated in 2017, today probably has more competition or more registered products. All these companies will be participating in the tender, whether it's from Malaysia or from overseas.
So do you have a sense that you're confident that you can at least maintain the product list or even expand the product list?
We are attempting to actually expand the product list because in the last 4 years, we haven't been sitting back and just supplying. We've been developing new products.
So will there be a significant change in terms of the public sector contribution from the current 43% if, let's say, we look forward to 2023?
I don't think it will be a substantive change, but I think there will be a change. Do Pharma is in the generic pharmaceutical side. In Malaysia, 70% of total generic is actually consumed by the government. Private sector only consumes 30%. So at 47% exposure in terms of generic sales, we are actually underrepresented in the government sector, to be quite honest. If you look at the total market dynamics, but it's somewhere that we are comfortable. Anything between 40 to 50% is because it allows us to buffer and shocks that may occur in any particular subsector that we are supplying into.
And supply chain disruptions, are they impacting Duo Pharma? Can you get whatever you want, whatever orders you place, or is it challenging to find active ingredients or even certain types of packaging?
We can get our raw material, there's no problem there. Where the supply chain disruption has impacted Duo Pharma is in terms of shipping rates for some of our exports. So if you look at our export sales, it's actually softened a little bit over the course of the last 2 years throughout the pandemic. But raw material availability is less of an issue, mainly because we've had a policy of diversifying our supply sources, not just from one supplier, but multiple suppliers. So, and we have we actually employ e-tendering for a lot of our major raw materials. So in other words, these multinational suppliers actually participate in tenders in order to supply us our raw materials. So that has driven down the price at some point.
Okay, and you've also got another segment, which is the ethical and consumer healthcare products. So 24% of sales, which is about 150 million ringgit in revenue. A lot of that centered on vitamin C, which everybody wants to take during the COVID-19 pandemic because you want to improve your immunity. But do you see sales coming down?
Yes, it will happen for sure. And that's why one of the things that you will see that Duo Pharma has done is pivoting into beauty and well-being as well. If you look at countries with a population base similar to Malaysia, take Taiwan, Singapore, smaller Australia, these are was potentially slightly more developed than Malaysia. Their per capita consumption of over-the-counter products is double that of Malaysia. So if that gives us an indication of where over-the-counter products are headed. But I think the combination of organic growth and also the fact that we're pivoting some of our products into different market segments will keep the growth momentum going. Maybe not at the same growth rate because vitamin C grew 20% year on year during the period of the pandemic. But we won't see that sort of growth rate, but we'll still see positive growth.
And since we're talking about growth, right, we have talked earlier on about these investee companies, but the size of which are very small, not significant, you don't have management control. Would you consider something of a larger scale, of a larger M&A in this country? Maybe even, let's say, acquire your competitor, Pharmaniaga. Would it be something completely out of your radar?
No, it's not out of the radar. We are open. In fact, if you look at the strategy that Duo Pharma's board has approved earlier, inorganic growth was part of that strategy as well. That would look at M&A activity, both domestic domestic and foreign as well. Now, unfortunately, due to the pandemic, we weren't able to do much in terms of the foreign side, maybe because we weren't able to do a proper due diligence, etc., travel restrictions. So we looked very much internally within Malaysia. And our M&A also, the inorganic growth drive, is not necessarily just in pharmaceuticals per se, but it's, if you look at our strategy, it's slightly more encompassing. We're looking at healthcare in general. So we did evaluate two or three different companies domestically, some of which we discounted, some of which we went ahead. So I'll give you an example, was our investment in Naluri, which I think caught the market a little bit by surprise, wondering what's a pharmaceutical company doing with a wellness app. But you know, the digitalization that's coming in the healthcare market, it's going to come. Pandemic has accelerated it, etc. So we needed to put our toe in the water to get a feel, to get a better understanding about it, etc. So in answer to your question, yes, we're still open for M&A. We will look at any potential candidate, but not limited only to pharmaceuticals. It will be within the healthcare space, something that makes sense to the world.
In the meantime, your share price, it's declined by 6.5% on the year-to-date basis, underperforming the broader FBM KLCI, which has appreciated by about 2% for the same period. Now, I look at Bloomberg, there are four analysts that cover Duo Pharma. Three are buy, one is a hold. Consensus target price for your stock is RM1.81, which is higher than the current share price now. Are they being fair or too optimistic with their forecast of 17% earnings growth for 2022?
Well, I think as far as the analyst is concerned, I can't question how they evaluate the valuation of a company. I avoid talking about share price because I've got no control over that. But if, as far as the analysts are concerned, in terms of their ability, it all depends on assumptions that they make in their numbers and the confidence they have in the management being able to deliver the strategy that we've promised. So my personal view is that we have been on a great track. Now, one thing you have to realize is, if you remember, foresight always gives you 2020 vision. The pharmaceutical companies, the selected pharmaceutical companies, went through this trajectory of share prices in terms of increase in share price on the back of the pandemic. We've all seen this pandemic case. Okay, so obviously, when the pandemic goes to the endemic, we also pay the price for having our share price having shot up so much at the time. So, I mean, I go on fundamentals. I personally think that the companies are on a good track at the moment. We're conservative, but at the same time, we have a clear vision of where we want to go into the future. We understand the changes and the challenges that are going to hit the pharmaceutical market. And therefore, we're already starting to pivot to look at other areas like digital healthcare systems, etc. Ultimately, it has to make sense from a return perspective, because we do have shareholders that rely on us to make the correct decisions moving forward long term.
And shareholders, are you going to give them 70% payout ratio? What's the guidance here?
Actually, we don't actually have a policy as far as payout is concerned. Now, if you look at our historical payout, we paid as low as 30% of PAT and as high as 77% of PAT. So it really much depends on operationally what's required in terms of to run the operations. Now, we went through a very large capital improvement project over the course of the last 5 years. We've invested over 300 million in terms of upgrading our manufacturing assets, and we're still going through that program. And you know, some of this was geared. We borrowed money from the market, etc. And obviously, anything you borrow has to be paid back. So ultimately, our dividend rate will be determined by operationally what sort of cash that we require to service our loans, etc. But obviously, we need to reward shareholders for the confidence that they've shown the company.
On that note, thank you for your time today. On the Breakfast Grill was Leonard Arif, Group Managing Director of Duo Pharma Biotech. I'm Wong Xiaoning, BFM 89.9.
The Breakfast Grill is brought to you by U-Mobile, unleashing unlimited potential every day.
Thank you for listening to this podcast. To find more great interviews, go to bfm.my or find us on iTunes. BFM 89.9, the business station.